Welcome to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
The labor shortage, as people are phrasing it, is a live reality in how we exist in the world economically and otherwise. So I'm very excited today to talk a little bit about kind of what brought us here, where we are at this moment, and what sort of things the future might hold.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, kp.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, and generous support from Lane County and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's December 3rd, 2021 program, Understanding the Local Labor Shortage. I'm Kitty Piercy, and I'm the City Club President. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. In today's program, we welcome the speakers, Henry Fields, Lane and Douglas County Workforce Analyst and Economist, OED, Christina Payne, Executive Director, Lane Workforce Partnership, Lennon Store, Labor Representative, Teamster Local 206. Biographical information on our speakers is available on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Help wanted signs seem to be permanently affixed to the doors of local establishments. The nightly news headlines focus on the acute lack of skilled workers for good paying jobs in the region. Hospitals offer top dollar to temp traveling medical workers to relocate temporarily and beef up woefully short-staffed wards and specialty departments. Apprenticeships and concentrated short-term training programs are ramping up to prepare workers to fill vacancies. As the constraints of the pandemic tentatively ease, it suddenly seems there are not enough workers to fill the slots emptied by the shutdowns almost 20 months ago. What's going on? When we were sheltering at home, did job slots somehow multiply? In this program, three experts will reflect on some of the factors that affect the overall employment picture. Henry Fields will review the numbers to show how demographics and shifting economic conditions have changed the employment scene. Christina Payne will describe how well current workforce assets match the industry needs and where training is making a difference. She will elaborate on the concept of the true cost of living. And Leonard Storer will explain some of the reasons workers may not be eager to return and what might need to be changed to make workplaces more functional.
All right, well, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for those introductions. My name is Henry Fields. I am the Lane County and Douglas County Workforce Analyst for the Employment Department's Research Division, which means that I provide data on our local economy and trends that we're seeing. So this topic is very near and dear to what I do every single day. The labor shortage, as people are phrasing it, is a live reality in how we exist in the world economically and otherwise. So I'm very excited today to talk a little bit about kind of what brought us here, where we are at this moment, and what sort of things the future might hold. So I can't remember a time in the 5 years that I've done this job that more people have been reaching out to me for answers about the economy. And I think that the only explanation for that is that there's a new appreciation for how workforce issues affect us all, and not only who counts as an essential worker, but also that staffing issues affect how we exist economically. The delays or shortages that we see are more visible to us than ever, the direct relationship with what workforces, what issues in the workforce we're seeing. So it's important to remember, just setting the table here, that the 2020 recession is so different from the last recession in everybody's memory. And that explains a lot about where we are today. So we're 20 months from our job peak of February of 2020, and we're still down in Lane County about 5% of our jobs. That's quite a few, but it's significantly improved from May of 2020, where we were down 15% of jobs, basically overnight. So by contrast, the Great Recession in 2008, at this point in the Great Recession, we were down 11% So it also didn't find the bottom of that Great Recession for another year from where we are right now. We were still losing jobs effectively at this time. And it took us 8.5 years to get back up to where we were before the Great Recession. So in contrast, the Oregon Office of Economic Analysis projects that Oregon will be back to its previous peak by mid-2022. So about 2 years after the beginning of that recession. You can see, just comparing those side by side, how different the situation on the ground is. So we talked a lot in the last recession about a jobless recovery, that there was overall economic indicators were looking good, but jobs weren't coming back very quickly. The 2020 recession has been a job-full recovery. And in some ways, it looks like a workerless recovery based on what we're seeing. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that today. One of the main ways that we use to find out information about what jobs are open, which are difficult to fill, is a survey that we put out to businesses every quarter that asks them about their job vacancies. And in the most recent version of this we released in the summer of 2021, there were 107,000 job vacancies across Oregon open at any given time. And 78% of those jobs were considered by employers to be difficult to fill. Both of those numbers were records for the series. It had never been higher in the 6 years that we've done this survey. So that tells you a lot about the fact that there's lots of jobs that are open right now, and the ones that are open are more difficult to fill than they typically are. I want to talk a little bit about unemployment because it's a very key economic metric. We talk a lot about it, but it's really important to understand what it actually means. Unemployment rate is a general measure of how difficult it is to find work. So basically, the percentage of people who are available for work but unsuccessful in finding it, even though they're making specific efforts. So even though we haven't gained back all of our jobs yet, the unemployment rate has healed substantially from where it was in 2020. So in October 2021, we stand at 4.9% unemployment, down from 14.4% in April of 2020. If you look at all the months since 2000 and averaged out the monthly unemployment rate, that number is 6.9%. So on a typical month, our unemployment rate in Lane County is 6.9%. We're 2 percentage points below that is in terms of October 2021. And that tells you that there's fewer workers than is typical in our area that are looking for work that can't find it. A pretty substantial difference, actually. And when we think about what all this means, one thing I want to encourage people to think about is, just like anything with a price, there is a supply versus demand consideration. Labor has to consider not only how much labor is available, but how much labor is demanded at any given time. And the demand right now is really, really high, which is what is causing a lot of these shortages that we see. Let me give you some examples specifically of what's going on. The current issue across the US is a kind of everybody hiring all at once effect. Okay, as businesses are coming back online from being shut down, as people are struggling to meet pent-up demand from people not being able to spend their money in the way that they wanted to go for go to a hotel or go to a restaurant, for example, businesses are all trying to hire at the same time, bring new and rehired workers on all at the same time. So the job openings rate in the US is 7%, which means 7% of jobs are open of the total. That's a record in the last 20 years. It typically bounces between 2 and 4%. Really, there's just a lot of demand happening that drives some of these shortages, these gaps that we're seeing. Another way to look at it would be that there's less than one unemployed person per job opening. So this is an interesting thing to think about, but if you look at the ratio between unemployed people who are available to work and can't find it, versus the number of open jobs, in recessions, that tends to go very high, right? As there's a lot of people that are unemployed. In early 2020, it was about 5 to 1. So in those scenarios, a business is not working very hard to find workers. As of mid-2021, we're already below 1 to 1. So if every unemployed person in the US accepted an open job, there would still be jobs open. So that really tells you how quickly the situation has changed. So I guess if there's less unemployment and we're still down so many jobs, did people disappear? What's going on with our labor force that is making this gap exist? I do want to remind everyone that essentially what we're seeing is a little bit of a supercharged version of what was already happening in late 2019, for example, where it was very difficult to hire people and there's lots of barriers to getting all the workers that businesses needed. And essentially the pandemic created some new issues as well as accelerated some existing trends. So the basic idea I want to emphasize with the remainder of my time is that there's a lot of things stacked on top of each other. And it's very difficult to say that just one thing causes this gap that we are seeing. So just as one example, somewhere near 2 million more people than were expected retired near the start of the pandemic. Now, this is a great example of something that we knew was coming. We knew that the baby boomer generation was getting older and preparing to retire. We had built that into our thinking. But the fact that so much of it happened at once was a little bit unexpected and forced some people's hands. For another example would be immigration. So immigration cratered in 2020 and 2021. And even if that comes back to the levels that it was previously in 2022, for example, there's still those gaps left in the years where people weren't moving here. The immigrants who would have moved here but for COVID, for example, as another example of where a gap in our workforce might come from. Another really interesting one that comes up a lot these days is that more people are actually entering self-employment. More people are starting their own business. The rate of business startups is higher than it's been in at least 15 years, which is kind of shocking when you think about how recently we were in a recession. So we get about 4,000 new business applications a month in Oregon versus about 2,500 in the years after the Great Recession. So significant increase. That means less people are available to do payroll employment at an existing business because they are starting their own business, which is not necessarily a negative thing, but does create a workforce shortage. And then finally, and this is one that has made a lot of headlines, we've heard a lot of things about the Great Resignation, the overall rate of quits being up. That is definitely something that's happening across the U.S. and across industries. People are quitting their jobs at record rates. We, in the most recent data, had a quits rate, a voluntary quits rate, which is people leaving their job of their own free will, not being fired or retiring, of 3%, meaning 3% turnover in all of jobs. And it's even higher in industries that started higher turnover. So, for example, retail and leisure and hospitality are already higher turnover industries, and they've been even more affected by this higher churn. But it's important to note that no industry has really been left scathed by the fact that there's more voluntary quits going on, which is a sign of power in terms of workers have more power than they did before, but is extremely difficult for a business to deal with. For example, if you're in the leisure and hospitality industry and are dealing with, you know, potentially 7% voluntary quits each month, that's a very difficult situation to be in. So that's basically some of the things that go towards describing what we mean and what we're seeing when we're talking about a labor shortage. Obviously, there's a lot more to explain here. And the last thing that I want to close on is the reasons that people give that they are not in the labor force, which is a really important thing to consider as well. So we have some survey data from the U.S. Census Bureau that asks people 18 and older, if they are not working, why? And so there's roughly 800,000 people in Oregon over the age of 18 that are not out of the labor force because of retirement. And they give a wide variety of answers as to why. But some of the major ones are things like caring for a child or an elderly person. More than 100,000 listed that as their primary reason. So that speaks to sometimes the lack of affordable or available childcare or senior care. More than 100,000 were caring for someone, experiencing symptoms, or concerned about spreading COVID. Another, which again is something that we hope improves in the months to come, but is keeping people out of the workforce. And then the remainder were all sorts of different reasons. And there are many other reasons besides, you know, an economic impact from COVID. They don't want to work. They don't have transportation to work. So it's really difficult to look at this data and see, here's the clear solution. This is why we have identified this problem. So I'm going to hand it off now to talk more specifically about what the workforce issues look like on the ground. I did want to say that a lot of this data and my contact information is available on qualityinfo.org, which is the Employment Department's public-facing website. If you want to talk more about any of these issues, I'd be glad to share the data that I've presented here and talk more about what's going on. But for now, I'm going to hand it off to Christina, who will give us a great perspective on what workforce training looks like in this current environment.
Thank you, Henry. And since Henry is our data guy and we rely so much on him, and I want to just appreciate the research department at the Oregon Employment Department for all the work they do. And every time that we go after a grant or anything, we get the support of Henry and the data. So I'll give you a little bit of background around myself. Again, my name is Christina Payne. I'm the executive director for Lane Workforce Partnership. We're the workforce board for Lane County. There are 9 boards across the state of Oregon, and there's several hundred across the country. These are federally funded workforce boards. And to give a little perspective, workforce programs, while you may not be familiar with them, if you haven't had an opportunity or the experience to access programs delivered through workforce boards, they really have been around since right after the Great Depression. About 1932 is when the federal laws came into effect to basically help people get a job. You would go to the office, they would have a listing of jobs for you, and they would tell you to go out and get that job. Over time, the programs have evolved as far as understanding a little bit more around what the job requirements would be, what the training would be that would individuals would need. And so there have been times in the country where there was huge investments in skilling up Americans and making sure that they had the skills needed for the jobs that existed. And then there would be a push towards industry to, it was like a training places. Well, now industry, you train your workforce. Then we'd see the pendulum swing back as skill sets for much needed careers, things like nursing, health, anything in healthcare that we depend on and rely on, those types of occupations were going unfilled. And as we see today, they continue to go unfilled. And I'll talk a little bit more about that as I go on. We have seen a progressive decline in investing in the workforce. And when I say that, it is whether it's adults or in K-12 and children. In the career technical education programs that were disinvested in over 30 years, particularly, I know in the state of Oregon that we fought for to get those funds back in the schools. That's only been an early win when you think about the time it takes for young people to understand that there are more things and more opportunities outside of just a college degree. We spent most of the 80s, 90s, and 2000s telling everyone that you need to get a college degree, not just in Oregon, but across the country, which a college degree is a great thing for many people and can open up a lot of doors. But we've also learned that it has created a huge amount of debt for a lot of people, and it hasn't always led to a career, because what works for one person and what one individual may think is the career of a lifetime, and that they would never want to do certain types of work. We're all different, which is great as humans, because people have all different types of things that they like to do. And the saying that no one wants to work outside might resonate with you, but there are a lot of people who love working outside and building and working with their hands. So we did a big disservice by spreading this message. And we realized that a little too late as a country. Going into the pandemic, I do want to talk about, before I talk about some of the specifics, the types of struggles that we were facing. I've been in workforce development for 22 years. I've been the executive director for 8. And the United Way, the national office, did what's called an ALICE study, which stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, and Employed. And what's amazing about the report that they did, and you can Google it, pull up this report, you can get it for Lane County. If you're outside of Lane County, you can get it for any county in Oregon, you can get it for any county across the country. But what this did was basically updated the household budget from a 1950s model to a reality model of 2016, when the last one that they've been able to publish. And what it demonstrated was a single adult, no children, needed to make $11 an hour in order to be above a poverty threshold that meant that they could survive beyond paycheck to paycheck. And it included, so the costs that are included are what you typically included in a budget, I would say prior to ALICE, was you would get your housing and your food, maybe transportation would be talked about. What they added was childcare, healthcare. It was also understood, you know, if you're working, you had all of your healthcare taken care of too. We know that's not true. So technology and other miscellaneous costs and your taxes. So that came down for a single person, a single adult, $11 an hour. For two adults, one infant, and one preschooler, it bumps up to an hourly household wage to $31 an hour. That could be combined two parents. We know that there aren't a lot of jobs out there. As Henry pointed out in the data, the average being around $19 an hour. I hope I'm not misremembering that, Henry. But you can combine that and you'd be fine. In Lane County, prior to the pandemic, 44% of the households here were considered ALICE families. That means they're working, but they are asset limited. They aren't able to save for if their car breaks down, or if a child gets sick and they have to stay home or pay for that medical bill. They don't have the resources to do that going into the pandemic. So now we're being asked, why aren't people going back to work? And it's because what may sound strange to people is because they can't afford to. If you have to pay for childcare, healthcare, you still have a huge bill hanging over your head, you may not be able to afford to go back to work for a job that doesn't even cover your childcare if you can find childcare. And that's a whole nother issue to unpack. Then we get into wages and careers. So the ALICE data is something that I hope people will look into on their own. The Federal Reserve banks have adopted it, and they're talking more about the relevancy of that report and in getting people truly out of poverty, not just living paycheck to paycheck with just one thing happens and they're out. So then we talk about, well, people can go to school and they could get a better job. What we still have in our heads is that a student going to school is living independently somehow, either off a parent or, I guess, student loans, and they're not working and they're just going to class. And that's not the reality. Students of all ages are typically, 80% are typically working in some capacity. And they're juggling work, family, and school. It's not that I just get to go to school. So you think, well, you got a free ride scholarship, or the federal government came in and helped you with that payment for school. So why don't you go to school? If all those other things aren't taken care of, such as childcare, transportation, housing, if that's not taken care of, then an individual can't go to school. And so let's talk about things like the nursing shortage. This is something I've tackled throughout my entire career. When we were able to, and we had the federal dollars, we invested and created a whole nother cohort for nursing at Lane Community College. At that point in time, that training program, when I say a whole nother cohort, it was 8 people for $80,000. And that was back in 2008. So it's an expensive endeavor. Then we went after a grant during the pandemic to expand nursing training. And we got into how we could help people support themselves while they were going through school. And we quickly learned through the community colleges that in Oregon and some other states, when a student is participating in their clinicals, they can't get paid. So they're a student who's already working. And a lot of times, if you're going to nursing school, you're working in a healthcare facility somewhere. And then you're being told that while you have to add on clinicals and you can't get paid during that time. We've actually gotten people all the way to their clinicals who have dropped out of nursing school and gone back to being baristas so that they can pay their bills. And that's not just one or two people. This is happening. I know two people who I've heard their stories who lived in their cars during clinicals. And that's a problem. if we could take some of these traditional training programs in healthcare and turn them into apprenticeship programs. And I've talked with Commissioner Val Hoyle about this through Boley, and she is leading the charge on this. So I don't want to sound like it's just my idea, but this is something that a lot of people can get behind, is that there needs to be more apprenticeship opportunities so people can earn a paycheck while they're learning. And we have traditional apprenticeship models that have proven to work really well in raising wages, providing health care, making sure people are earning a living while they're learning a new skill. And we've got to do something differently if we want to increase the skills of our workforce, increase the wages, and ensure that people can get the skills that are needed that we need. We need people in healthcare. If we've learned anything through this pandemic, I think we've learned that. And then we also need childcare workers. It's the care economy that you hear about. And that's another place where an apprenticeship model that would help early childhood educators bridge into elementary education and careers that have more longevity, that have a higher pay, we would see more people going into early childhood education. Instead, besides spending decades telling everyone to go to college, we also spent decades in the workforce programs coaching women to go into what's considered non-traditional careers in order for them to support their families. So we coached women to leave care jobs, to leave the cares field, whether it be childcare or healthcare, in order to have a job where they could pay their bills and support their families. So to get into, when I say non-traditional, the apprenticeship programs that were set up, so around electrical, carpentry, and road maintenance, road crews, work that traditionally wasn't done by women. And we paved the way, and we really, you know, as women, and we said, you know, we can do this work too. And certainly we can. But what that did was eliminate work that is meaningful and is needed. Eliminate not the work, the workforce, excuse me, that is needed because we didn't value it. So we have a bit of a values problem right now. And if we can take the model that's been successful, that's worked in the non-traditional areas for women, when it's typically what we thought of as traditional for men, if we could take that model and whether it's changing laws or creating those pathways so that there's apprenticeship in early childhood education and in nursing, we will see those pipelines come back, and we'll see people coming back into those jobs, and not only just coming back into those jobs, but able to support their families and thrive in that work. And I think with that, I'm going to hand it over to Leonard, because I think he'll have a little bit more to say.
I'd like to thank you and Henry for this information that you've supplied. I find a lot of it very interesting, and it fills in some gaps in my understanding of what the labor market looks like right now. My name is Leonard Stare. I'm a city councilor in Springfield, Oregon, and also a representative of Teamsters 206. For 18 years, I was an over-the-road truck driver, and for 10 years, I was a shop steward representing the drivers that I worked with. Since 2011, I've been a representative for the local. Our duties include organizing, representation in arbitrations and grievance procedures, and also the negotiation of our agreements. We function as sort of a canary in the coal mine in that we represent workers in all sectors. The Teamsters were originally just truck drivers, and we've diversified over the last 50 years to represent drivers and or represent employees in retail, in service sector, transportation sector, the emergency sector, we represent ambulance drivers, and also in health and welfare, we rep what Christina had to say about the nursing industry is certainly struck a chord with me because we represent nurses out on the Oregon coast. I want to thank Lane Workforce for being very helpful to us. We had a couple of our employers close up shop in the print industry, and that gives you an idea of where the print industry is headed. When we have layoffs, then it's usually a first indicator that maybe an industry is in distress, and it works the other way too. Right now, just about all of the trends that we're seeing are upward right now. Every sector in this sort of halting recovery that we're in the middle of seems to be in hiring mode. Nurses more urgently than anyone else, but I would say the truck drivers are a desperate shortage. The supply chain right now is in distress, and we need truck drivers more than anybody else right now, with the possible exception of healthcare workers. If anybody who's listening right now is sort of at a standstill or at a crossroads as to what kind of job to seek, then I would encourage you to look into possibly obtaining a CDL and becoming a truck driver, because you could pretty much name your own price right now. Before the COVID-19 pandemic started, a worker's leverage was minimal in this country. Almost every state is a so-called at-will state, which means that an employer can fire a worker for any reason that doesn't directly involve discrimination against a protected class. If a worker were an animal right now, then they could be classified as an endangered species, except minus the protections that the government extends to animals right now. When the pandemic hit, the non-essential employees had a relatively easy. They could sit at home and they could collect a federal subsidy, which gave them some time to just some time and space to think. And they made maximum use of that opportunity. Workers across the country who've been trapped with jobs were able to see the interchangeability of their jobs with all of their coworkers. And stripped of meaning, all of these jobs are standing out mostly for their banality. The money that these workers collected from the government eventually ran out. But what lingered for them was a sense of something that I'm sure the Germans probably have a lengthy word for. It's a sense of longing for options that they had not up until now been told about, and that they might, and opportunities and options that might not even now exist. They're starting to think outside the box, which I think might account for some of the creation of new businesses that Henrik was talking about. The fundamental failure of a worker in this country, if there is one, is a failure of the imagination. With time to reflect, time and space to reflect, the non-essential workers became like Herman Melville's Bartleby the Scrivener, who, when he was confronted with one more drudgery and one more meaningless task, finally said, "I would prefer not to." In America, when we assess somebody who we've just met, we ask, "What do you do for a living?" In Europe, the question tends to be, "What do you love to do?" And is there any doubt which of those two questions tells you more about the person that you're talking to? Increasingly, the American workforce is opting for less money and less work and more love. I think for the essential worker, of course, things are much harder right now. Overworked, and they're saddled with the snatching away of this temporary hero pay that they might have been given at their employer. Today's essential worker is discovering how little the employer really has to offer them aside from a meaningless title. In what other country could the designation essential be said to be a curse, as it is for these essential workers who we depend upon so heavily? In both sectors, the workforce is finding itself transformed and a lot more radical than they used to be. For the essential worker, the demand now is merely a return to a semi-normal life. for the more fortunate non-essential workers, the question is becoming, after all this, what a normal life could possibly be.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our YouTube channel and our social media pages.